6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. The Russian and Turkish president say the assassination of Russia's ambassador between the two countries. Dorian Jones has more from Ankara.
A ceremony was held at Ankara's airport for assassinated Russian ambassador Andrei Karlov as his body was repatriated to Russia. The ambassador was shot dead by an off-duty Turkish policeman at an art exhibition. Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said Tuesday in Istanbul that bilateral relations will not be derailed. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says Turkey is committed to finding those responsible and that his security forces will work closely with their Russian counterparts. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
Based on what the gunman allegedly shouted, Karlov was shot in an apparent protest against Russia's involvement in Syria. Islamic State extremists are claiming responsibility for Tuesday's truck attack in Berlin that killed at least 12 people and wounded dozens more at a crowded Christmas market in the German capital. The terror group made the claim after the German police released a lone suspect captured Monday evening after a huge truck smashed into an open market where locals and tourists were partaking in traditional Christmas festivities. The chief federal prosecutor's office says it released the suspect, a Pakistani national, because investigators did not have enough evidence to charge him with the crime. Four policemen were killed and 11 people wounded in battles with Islamist militants raiding a village in southern Jordan. Tuesday's attack comes 2 days after gunmen killed 10 people in a shootout in the same area near the city of Karak. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is rejecting bipartisan calls for a special committee to investigate Russian interference in the U.S. election. Speaking on Kentucky Public TV in his home state, McConnell said procedures are in place to follow up on U.S. intelligence that Russia meddled in the U.S. election, in part to help Donald Trump defeat Hillary Clinton.
There's no question the Russians were messing around our election. It's a matter of genuine concern. And it needs to be investigated. And in the Senate, we're going to investigate that in what we call the regular order. We already have a committee established to do this. We don't need to set up a special committee to do what we already have the ability to do. But it is a serious matter, and it will be investigated.
For his part, Trump has publicly rejected intelligence that Russia was involved in hacking that may have influenced the U.S. presidential election. U.N. officials report as many as 20 people are feared dead in Kinshasa after violence broke out during political demonstrations. Demonstrators are calling for President Joseph Kabila to step down because his term in office expired Monday. The DRC's Constitutional Court has ruled that Mr. Kabila can remain in power until new elections are held. The ruling party has proposed the vote take place in April of 2018. The nation's opposition is calling the president's continuation in office illegal and illegitimate. Mexico is mourning the deaths of 29 people killed in an explosion at a huge fireworks market near Mexico City. Tuesday's blast wounded at least 70 people at the market, packed with shoppers buying fireworks for traditional Christmas and New Year's parties. Emergency crews needed to wait several hours until the explosion died down so they could approach the site to look for victims. The blast also damaged several buildings and nearby vehicles. So far, no word on the cause. Japan's Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the government's plan to relocate U.S. Marine Air Base in Okinawa, dealing a blow to opponents who want the base off the island. The Japanese and U.S. governments want the air base in the middle of a crowded city moved to a sparsely populated area for safety reasons. But many Okinawans want it relocated off the island, altogether because of noise, crime, and accidents linked to the U.S. base. The court made the decision without any hearings. And President Barack Obama has permanently banned new oil and gas drilling in large sections of the Arctic and Atlantic oceans. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian President Yahya Jammeh has been explaining why he recanted his decision to accept the results of the December 1st election.
What we are asking for is to go back to the electorate under completely independent electoral commission. That would supervise the election as we used to do before without having any problem, and allow every Gambian to vote.
That's Gambian President Yahya Jammeh speaking Tuesday in Banjul. Authorities in the Central African Republic plan to close an airport IDP camp. Sudan and South Sudan extend their oil cooperation agreement. And opposition leaders in the Democratic Republic of Congo have told their supporters not to cooperate with President Joseph Kabila, who continues to cling to power.
In Matete, an opposition area, Peter Kabongo tells VOA that security forces spent the night shooting tear gas and live rounds, as well as arresting people.
That's VOA's William Klaus in Kinshasa. Tensions are rising in Kenya ahead of that country's 2017 presidential poll. We'll tell you why Kenya's National Teachers Union wants British International Academy schools to shut down, and a new treatment for early-stage prostate cancer gives hope. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambian President Yahya Jammeh says he's not asking the country's Independent Electoral Commission to declare him the winner of the December 1st presidential election, but he says he wants the commission to reorganize the poll so that every Gambian will be given the opportunity to vote. Speaking to a delegation from the African Bar Association in Banjul on Tuesday, Mr. Jammeh said he changed his mind after first accepting the results because the Electoral Commission announced it had made a mistake in the tabulation of the vote. He said the December 1st poll was rigged in favor of the opposition.
When the results were announced, believing that the same system was used, I said, okay, I accept. If this is the verdict of the people, this is my destiny. I accepted it in good faith and I congratulated the person. Then, I think this was on a Friday. Monday, I think, the same IEC that announced the results called all the parties to their headquarters, and said that they have made mistakes in the results. They called and then stated that this is what has happened. The tabulation of the election results from the 53 constituencies was done correctly. Furthermore, regional election results were also tabulated correctly from Banjul to Bassey administrative areas. However, when the total votes per region were being tallied, certain figures were inadvertently transposed. Instead of adding the total number of votes polled by Mr. Adama Barrow in the Bassey administrative area, the IEC added the total number of ballots cast for Bassey administrative area to Adama Barrow's total number of votes, thus swelling the number of votes Mr. Barrow polled nationally. This is very clear language. It is not from me. And they said this error was repeated across for other contesting candidates. I think this was an afterthought, but this is what they added. You will realize that, one, they didn't say the number that was involved. How they rectified it was not mentioned. So we realize that this is unacceptable. And the opposition themselves, if this was said about me, they would not accept the result. The rest would not have accepted the result. But because they have an agenda, their problem in Africa is Yahya Jammeh and other heads of state. And I stand to die for what I believe in. That because you are white or whatever color doesn't mean that I should worship you. Those days are gone when they were forcing us to, when we were their slaves and we were their colonies, they were the colonial masters. Today, the only master is the Almighty Allah that I worship and nobody else.
President Jammeh accused some unnamed Western countries of instigating trouble in his country, saying they don't like him because he always says what they don't want to hear. He said he will not be intimidated and will die for what he believes in. Mr. Jammeh accused the Economic Community of West African States of violating its own charter, which he says calls for no interference in the internal affairs of a member state.
The ECOWAS team came here, and I explained to them, gave them the documents, what has happened, and why I decided to reverse my early acceptance to non-acceptance based on the facts. They came and I explained to them, they said they were going to have a meeting in Abuja. But before they came, also we have documents from a foreign government saying that they are going to send those people. A government that is not even an African country. They are going to send those people to talk to me, not to change my mind. Otherwise, there's going to be bloodshed. So in order to avoid bloodshed, I must accept what I earlier said and also leave the country. That I should leave the country and take a break. Who are they to tell me to leave my country? Because if I stay around, I may interfere with the democratization process. This country has been independent since 1965. And they want me to leave my country. Who are they to tell me to leave my country?
President Jammeh said he is a man of peace, but he will defend himself if needs be. He said those who call for him to step down immediately following the election were disregarding the Gambian constitution, which he says allows for a 60-day transitional period. UN human rights officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say at least 20 people have been killed since Monday in sporadic clashes between protesters and security forces. President Joseph Kabila's second elected mandate expired at midnight Monday, but he remains in office. As William Klaus reports from Kinshasa, the country's top opposition leader has called for a campaign of peaceful resistance.
As midnight approached on Monday, much of Kinshasa was filled with whistling and the banging of pots and pans to mark the end of President Joseph Kabila's second and, according to the constitution, final term in office. The celebrations gave way to clashes between small groups of demonstrators and security forces, while gunfire was heard in opposition neighbourhoods. Sporadic running battles continued through Tuesday, and local media have reported that an office building belonging to Kabila's political party and a police headquarters were set on fire. José María Arenas, the director of the UN Joint Human Rights Office in the DRC, told Reuters that his team is reviewing reports that 20 civilians have been killed in confrontations with security forces. Arenas told VOA that military police had denied his staff access to the University of Kinshasa, where clashes have taken place, and threatened them. VOA visited opposition areas and saw evidence of the street battles. In Matete, an opposition area, Peter Kabongo tells VOA that security forces spent the night shooting tear gas and live rounds, as well as arresting people. According to Kabongo, their purpose was to intimidate the population. Soldiers and police have been patrolling Kinshasa and other cities since last week, and political demonstrations have been banned since September. Kabila's chief diplomatic adviser, Barnaby Kikaya bin Karubi, said the measures are justified.
Le déploiement des forces de l'ordre dans la ville de Kinshasa.
Karubi said on Monday that the level of tension throughout the DRC justifies the massive deployment of security forces. He blamed the media for presenting December 19th, the last day of Kabila's term, as an apocalyptic date. The Constitutional Court ruled earlier this year that Kabila can stay in office until the Electoral Commission is able to organise elections. He named a new unity government late Monday night under terms of a deal signed last month that provisionally schedules polls for April 2018. But the preeminent leader of the Congolese opposition for more than 35 years, Etienne Tshisekedi, addressed the nation in a video statement shared online.
Je lance un appel solennel.
He says, I launch a solemn appeal to the Congolese people to not recognize the illegal and illegitimate authority of Joseph Kabila and to peacefully resist this coup d'etat. He accused Kabila of high treason. Tshisekedi says the opposition platform that he heads, Le Rassemblement, will resume negotiations with the president's political alliance on Wednesday, following a four-day suspension. The opposition is calling for polls during 2017 and for Kabila to commit to not running in the next presidential election. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
Today's Wednesday, December 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout-out to listeners on our affiliate station, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has reiterated the urgency of an arms embargo against South Sudan. A spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir told VOA yesterday that an arms embargo would significantly reduce the country's ability to be a sovereign nation. But Secretary General Ban says an arms embargo will strengthen, not undermine, the political process in South Sudan. He also said it would diminish the capacity of both the rebels and the government to wage war.
We have repeatedly seen the deliberate targeting of civilian communities perceived to support an opposing side. As efforts to revive the political process continue, the least we can do is to stop the flow of more weapons, which pose a direct threat to the safety and security of civilians and humanitarian workers.
That's UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Meanwhile, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, told the 15-member UN Security Council this week that if the Council fails to impose arms embargo, South Sudan could be on a trajectory towards mass atrocities.
We need to bring this resolution at last to a vote, which we will do by the end of this year. Members of the Council will need to raise their hands and make a decision on where they stand on the issues of life and death that have been raised by the Secretary General, that have been raised by everyone who goes to South Sudan and comes back, and above all, that the people of South Sudan have at stake.
That's U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power. Sudan and South Sudan Tuesday extended their oil cooperation agreement for another 3 years. The deal also covers security and financial arrangements between the two nations. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
South Sudan Minister of Petroleum and Mining Isaac Lol Gatkwath says he wrapped up talks with his Sudanese counterparts today on the 2012 deal covering trade, movement and security for the next 3 years.
And in the 3 years, we will also restructure the transitional financial arrangement, restructure it how we can pay back our sisterly country.
The Transitional Financial Arrangement, or TFA, was reached between the two countries when South Sudan seceded from Sudan, taking with it 75% of the oil revenues that Sudan previously enjoyed when the two countries were one. South Sudan was to pay Sudan about $3.3 billion from Juba oil revenues over 3.5 years. Gatkwath says the agreement needed to be renegotiated because oil production and prices have fallen dramatically over the past couple of years.
We are having difficulties internally and also globally because the oil price fell. So that's why we came to our brothers and sisters in Sudan to rearrange this TFA. And that is what we have agreed. If the price of the barrel is 20 to 30, we will pay these percentages. If it is this and this, we will pay this.
Gatkwath says Sudan and South Sudan agreed to work together to provide more support to revive the oil industry in South Sudan so that the two countries can fulfill the terms of the cooperation agreement.
We also had signed an MOU between the Republic of Sudan and the Republic of South Sudan in how we can cooperate in all areas, starting with us getting power from Michilichu so that we can start the production in Unity Oil Field. Also us using the base camp in Michilichu so that our oil workers can work there. Also the training and the capacity building in all areas.
Speaking in Arabic, Sudan's Minister of Petroleum, Mohammed Zayed Awad, says his ministry will cooperate fully with his South Sudanese counterpart.
There will be good cooperation between Sudan and South Sudan in providing logistical and technical support after we make sure that security arrangements are in place to protect the oil fields and the workers from both sides.
Awad says Sudan will also help South Sudan rehabilitate oil sites that have been affected by the 3 years of fighting in South Sudan in a bid to increase oil production. The two parties also agreed that refined oil products treated in Sudanese refineries, such as gasoline, will be provided to South Sudan at a discounted price. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Tensions are heating up in Kenya around next year's presidential poll. A special sitting of parliament to debate changes to the electoral law ended with a fist fight on the House floor. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Order members, order members. Order members, I think you have now done enough with each other.
With fewer than 8 months until the general election, Kenyan politicians are wrangling over how the Electoral Commission should carry out the process. In September, members of parliament from both sides of the political divide passed electoral reforms, following weeks of protests demanding the Electoral Commissioner step down. The commission was accused of favouring the ruling Jubilee coalition administration. On Tuesday, a special session of parliament met to debate proposed amendments to the reforms. The opposition says the amendments were proposed by and favour the ruling Jubilee coalition. Opposition legislators began the session by blocking the speaker from accessing the House chamber for more than 2 hours. Justice and Legal Affairs Committee Chairman Samuel Chepkonga said the amendments were requested by the Electoral Commission itself.
I am tabling this report of IBC.
Speaker Justin Muturi asked Chepkonga to produce documents to prove the request was made by the Electoral Commission and that his panel had agreed to present the amendments.
So that then nobody says that your proposed amendments are personal and not that of those of the committee. Yes.
One opposition member of parliament threatened a boycott of the election.
If at all we do not have laws that are favourable, laws that will ensure a free and fair election, then there will be no election. The opposition will actually not participate in that particular election because there's no reason why we should go to the guillotine.
The debate ended in chaos after lawmakers began fist fights on the floor. The House has now adjourned until January 24th. Meanwhile, in a media statement, ambassadors from 10 countries denied working with organisations, political parties or candidates to influence the election result. The statement was in response to the Kenyan government's order Monday for the International Foundation for Election Systems to stop its voter education programme in the country. The envoys said their assistance supports Kenyan citizens to exercise their right to vote and have their voices heard. U.S. Ambassador Robert Godek said the organization, which is supported by USAID, has expertise and experience in supporting free, fair, credible, and peaceful elections around the world. He said the United States is disappointed by the effort to discredit the program. Kenya is to hold its sixth general election in August 2017. Mohammed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi for VOA News.
In Kenya, a national teachers union and advocacy groups are calling for low-cost private schools operated by British international academies to be shut down over irregularities. The schools maintain that they offer affordable, high-quality education to low-income families. For VOA, Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nakuru.
14-year-old Marceline Mokera visits her former school, a Bridge International Academy located near her home in an informal settlement outside Nairobi. She finished top of her class in the state-administered final primary school exams. She and her father hope her grades will land her in a top national secondary school next year. Nyakundi, a casual laborer, has been paying tuition fees averaging $40 a term.
My daughter, she has done well, and I think she will go far to get a better school where she will be able to manage and even to assist me, even the young assistant platters.
Bridge runs around 400 private academies across Kenya. Liberia recently announced it will turn over management of its public school system to Bridge International, but the schools have come under pressure both in Uganda and Kenya. The Kenya National Union of Teachers has called for the school's closure over alleged non-compliance with Kenya's nationally approved curriculum. The co-founder of the academies, Shannon May, says the Bridge schools are on track to meet a January deadline for the government to have at least 30% of the teachers trained on the state curriculum.
There is no negative competition between a community school and a public school, that actually they help improve each other. And that as an organization at Bridge, what we're trying to do is just to ensure that every child has access to a great school, whether they choose to be in a community school or in a public school.
Abraham Ochieng from the East African Center for Human Rights says the schools take advantage of the poor. His organization is calling for them to be shut down.
Is it affordable, really? And versus the public schools, which are essentially free, are they able and they offer better quality education than this bridge? Their motivation, are they out to enhance the education or is it for profit? So and until that is very clear, then it will not be able to say that it's actually serving the poor or the people in the informal settlements.
More than 100,000 students from marginalized communities are currently enrolled in the academies across Kenya. Advocates of the schools say literacy levels in the slum areas they serve are rising. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nakuru, Kenya.
Nearly 30,000 residents of the Central African Republic are still living outside the city's airport. The displaced persons camp sprang up in 2013 as people sought protection from rebel groups and intercommunal violence. Now, 3 years later, the country's president has urged the remaining residents to, in his words, go home for Christmas. But as Zach Badov reports from Bangui, that may be easier than said than done.
At its peak, the Impoko Airport camp housed over 100,000 people seeking the protection of international troops as fighting between rival militia engulfed their neighborhoods in the capital. Much of the city is peaceful now, but the camp remains.
Leocadia Giando takes us to her old neighborhood, just a 20-minute walk away. Militia destroyed her home during the fighting. She shows us where her brother lives. She wants to leave the airport camp too, but can't afford the rent. Her husband got sick while living in the camp and died.
I don't have any financial help. I want to leave the camp because we're living there like animals. We sleep on the ground. We don't have any beds. There are many illnesses there. We need to leave to live a comfortable life.
She is not alone. The country is still recovering from the conflict, and many of the people left at the camp are those who have yet to find jobs. And the crisis has inflated prices.
Before, rent was about $10. Now the same house is $13. A house that costs $13 per month is now $25. So we need to struggle to have a new life. It's not going to be easy.
The government says the camp must be closed because of health issues and security concerns, given the camp's proximity to the airport. Some refugees may be relocated to transit camps.
We are starting this program with the little money that we have, but we have the word of the international community that once the refugees are relocated, once they go back to their neighborhoods, they are going to have support.
The government stresses that it will respect the dignity and international human rights of the displaced people. The process may take time.
I don't think that both the humanitarian and the government joining forces will have the capacity to drive out of the site all the people at once. No, it's something that will go at some pace until the site is emptied. For me, it has been too long. To be honest with you.
The government has not yet set a deadline for when the camp must be cleared, but has encouraged the camp's residents to go home in the coming week. Zach Badorf for VOA News, Bangui.
That's it for this Wednesday, December 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that everyone in Africa will have a very nice day.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA. Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.